John Boy.
Lessons from the screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
Yo, 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 welcome back to another episode of Lessons from the Screen. We are back this week with a brand new show. This is the show where we review whether or not a show, a documentary, a document, anything that you can get from any particular digital screen is worth your time, is worth watching. We waste our time, our energy, and our brain power so that you don't have to. You're welcome. Lessons from the Screen is brought to you by PacSync through the Freedom Train Network. You can find us at www.freedomtrainradio.com or on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. My favorite is Stitcher, of course, because, you know, it's not dependent on whether you have an Android or iPhone. Everybody can download Stitcher. But anyways, be sure to head to those places and leave a review. Be sure to head to thefreedomtrainradio.com and leave a review on the shows. Tell us what you think. Then be sure to head to www.packsync.org to show some love and support for our sponsors. PackSync is a black activist and advocacy organization focused on developing the black community through a shift in culture, education, and economics. As always, Lessons from the Screen has a frame of reference and perspective that is aligned with that of the black community. So the things we talk about will be looked at with the racial component involved and with some lessons and things that can be used to improve the community. During this episode of Lessons from the Screen, we will be jumping into school shootings. The history of school shootings will be looked at, as well as looking to see if there have been mass shootings at black schools in recent times. We will also be looking at the political debate and how both conservatives and liberals are using the black community to advance their goals. In this episode of Lessons from the Screen, we will be looking at school shootings and the black community. So, school shootings go back to the mid-1700s. In 1764, in Greencastle, Pennsylvania, 10 people were killed and 2 more were injured when 4 Native Americans entered the schoolhouse and shot the schoolmaster, Enoch Brown, and killed as many as 9 children. And while only the teacher was shot, as the children were killed with melee weapons, it is still one of the earliest incidences involving mass murders in schools, and that was before the United States officially became the United States. Now, what's interesting about that last point about the weapons being melee weapons is that China had a rash of school mass murders 5-10 years ago, roughly, completely involving melee weapons such as knives and hammers and things like that. So I throw that out there to say to a lot of people who would say that it's impossible to have mass murders and things like that if you remove guns from the equation. I do agree it would definitely reduce the number. It would definitely reduce. I mean, studies have shown that if you reduce the number of guns available, then you reduce the number of gun-related incidences. Of course, that's like a duh moment. So moving forward, I do want to go into the numbers of school shootings throughout the centuries in America, and these are just the raw incidences. So if a gun went off, regardless of whether or not anyone was hurt, we're going to be looking at those numbers. So in the 19th century, which was 1800 to 1900, we saw at least 37 school shootings, with the decade averages increasing towards the end of the century. In the 20th century, which is 1900 to 2000, we saw at least 227 school shootings, with a steep increase in the 1970s and another steep increase in the 1990s. It almost doubled. Now, in the 21st century, which is basically has been the last 2 decades, roughly the last 18 years, we have seen 211 school shootings. And again, we are only 2 decades in. So suffice to say that what this does tell us is that school shootings are not new. They have been a part of American history since before there was an American era to label history with. But what this does also show us is that the problem is getting worse. Now, it's not just about school shootings, because that would be an empty stat if we were to just talk about harmless incidences involving guns. So with that, I decided to break out how many of those shootings resulted in the deaths of three or more people going back to the 1970s, and I found a total of at least 31 that we're going to go through. So in the 1970s, there were three shootings that resulted in three or more deaths. And that's how I'm classifying this. A school shooting that results in three or more deaths, I'm classifying as a mass murder school incident. So in the 1970s, there were three of these incidents. In 1976, in Fullerton, California, a 37-year-old custodian at California State University killed seven people. In 1970, at Kent, Ohio, the Kent State protest of the Vietnam War, the Ohio National Guard fired on students, killing four people. The students were unarmed. 1974, in Olean, New York, an 18-year-old honor student killed three adults at his high school. So those were the three incidences in the 1970s. I know I'm talking crazy when I say incidences. I know the word is incidents. I get it. But incidences feels better to me. So we're moving on to the 1980s. So in the 1980s, there were two that resulted in deaths of three or more. In 1989, in Stockton, California, at Cleveland Elementary, a 24-year-old killed five children before killing himself. And in 1985, in Tacoma, Washington, at Spanaway Middle, a 14-year-old killed her 15-year-old ex-boyfriend and another friend before killing herself. And yes, I said she. Now, I want to go back a little bit before we go forward. So I want to say that in the 1970s, out of the 30 total school incidents that there were in the 1970s, three resulted in the deaths of three or more children. And that number is up from 18 in the 1960s, 18 total school related incidences, 30 in the 70s. Three of those related in three or more deaths resulted in three or more deaths. I'm sorry. And then in the 1980s, there were 39 total school-related gun incidences, and two of those resulted in the deaths of three or more. In the 1990s, we're coming into the 1990s now, there were 62 school-related shootings, and of those 62 school-related shootings, nine of them resulted in three or more deaths. Some of those we're very familiar with, such as the 1999 Columbine High School massacre, which killed 15 people in Colorado. Then there was the 1991 University of Iowa shooting, in which a 28-year-old former graduate student killed four faculty and one student, and then killed himself. There was the 1998 Westside Middle School in Arkansas, which a 13-year-old and 11-year-old killed a teacher and four students. Then there was the 1998 Springfield, Oregon, at Thurston High School, a 15-year-old killed his parents, then drove to the school and killed two students. In 1992, in Olivehurst, California, at Lyndhurst High, a 20-year-old former student killed three students and one teacher. 1996, in Moses Lake, Washington, at Frontier Middle, a 14-year-old killed the teacher and two students in algebra. 1996, in San Diego, California, at San Diego State, a 36-year-old killed three professors. In 1997, Pearl, Mississippi, at Pearl High School, a 16-year-old killed his mother, his ex-girlfriend, and another student. In 1997, at West Paducah, Kentucky, at Health High School, three students were killed by a 14-year-old. And we're moving into the 20th century, and as I said earlier, there were 227 school-related incidents in the 20th century, 63 of them from 2000 to 2009, and nine of those shootings resulted in three or more deaths. First one was in Blacksburg, Virginia, and 2007, the Virginia Tech school shooting, in which a 23-year-old student killed 32 people and himself. I believe that's the third largest mass shooting in American history, American modern history. Anyways, and the reason I say that is because when they classify and rank these mass murders, they conveniently leave off all of the black people that were killed and slaughtered in these mass incidents throughout history. So they try to say things like the modern era, in which they still conveniently leave off a lot of the modern era. And we're talking post-1960 era mass murder events that happened to black people. And so that's why I say, yeah, whatever. But moving forward, in 2005 in Red Lake, Minnesota, at Red Lake Senior High, a 16-year-old student killed his grandparents and then five students, a teacher, and a security guard before killing himself. In 2006 in Nickel Mines, Pennsylvania, a 32-year-old killed five students before killing himself in an Amish school. In 2008 in DeKalb, Illinois, at Northern Illinois University, a 27-year-old killed five people before killing himself. In 2002, at Tucson, Arizona, at the University of Arizona, a 40-year-old veteran killed three professors before killing himself. In 2002, in Grundy, Virginia, at the Appalachian School of Law, a 42-year-old killed three people. In 2002, again, in Conception, Missouri, a 71-year-old killed two people and committed suicide at Conception Abbey, which was a seminary school, I believe. In 2006, in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, at Shepherd University, a 49-year-old killed himself and his two sons on the campus. And 2008, in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, a 23-year-old at Louisiana Tech killed two classmates and herself. And we're moving on into the modern decade, if you will. So from 2010 to 2018, there have been 148 school shooting incidents, and eight of those have resulted in three or more deaths. Now, we're all very familiar with most of these because they're all so recent, so I'm not going to go even as far into the details as I went with the other ones. But in 2012 in Newton, Connecticut, we had the Sandy Hook incident, 28 people killed. 2018, Parkland, Florida, and these are ordered by the amount of people killed, as they all have been. In 2018, Parkland, Florida, 17 people killed at the high school, and that was recent. That was last month. And 2015 in Rosenberg, Oregon, 10 people killed at Umpqua Community College. In 2012 in Oakland, California, 7 people are killed at Okos University. And 2013 in Santa Monica, California, 6 people killed at Santa Monica College. Let me get it together. It's not Satan, it's Santa Monica College. In 2014, Marysville, Washington, 5 people killed at Marysville High School. In 2010 in Huntsville, Alabama, 3 people were killed at the University of Alabama in Huntsville. And in 2012 in Chardon, Ohio, 3 people were killed at Chardon High School. So what does all this mean? Why did you bother reading out all those numbers and all those dates and times and incidents? And the reason I bothered doing that is because I wanted to illustrate, one, that this is not a new phenomenon, because a lot of people are behaving as if it is a new phenomenon. But two, I wanted to really give a good, solid understanding of what's been happening, where it's been happening, and what's been going on about it. Because oftentimes when you just say that there were 8 shootings, people can kind of just distance themselves from that statistic. But when you give dates, when you give places, when you give university names, ages, when you give numbers like that, how many people died, it cements it a bit more. And I think for this conversation, we need a lot more cementation of the sincerity, of the breadth, of the seriousness of what's going on before we move forward in this conversation, especially us as black people, because those are the same type. That's the same type of information that's often denied to us when it comes to our history. So moving forward, this is current history. It's moving forward. I also wanted to bring up, I wanted to solidify this particular point to let people know exactly how much has been going on which would make this next statement that I'm going to make even stronger. Amongst all these tragedies, I couldn't find a single one that involved a black shooter or a predominantly black school. Now, I know there are ample databases out there. There is no uniform reporting system, and people don't have to report to the databases, and the information that's gathered is largely, the terms are defined differently. It's confusing, and there are a lot of different variables. But so it is possible that there is one out there. But I, out of the things I looked at, I could not find a single black shooter at a school that killed three or more people, and I couldn't find this same incident happening at a predominantly black school. And now, this isn't like the stereotype of the white mass murderer, because there have been black mass murderers, and in truth, each demographic is represented fairly accurately in the mass murder category. Whites are roughly 75% of the population. They are roughly 75% of the mass murderers. So, you know, this isn't that. This is something different. And there are a lot of reasons why people have estimated this to be. One could be because black schools have, in large sections of the country, already become prisons. You already have to get patted down. The school-to-prison pipeline is real, and it's a lot deeper than just the school's education plan or lack thereof. These students are in prisons, bars on the windows, bars on the doors, doors locked, resource officers pass through, metal detectors, people walking, cops walking around with guns, not resource officers because they look different than real police officers, walking around with guns, key cards, access codes. Like these kids are going to school in real prisons. My school was next door. My middle school, Bellevue Middle, was right next door to a real live prison. And there were several instances where you could have real conversations with the inmates if our recesses coincided. So, you know, that's one theory, is that black schools are already fortresses. They're already prisons. Another theory is that blacks are just better able to control their rage and focus it on a single point or a single individual instead of a group. And there's some merit to this, but there's also some merit against it as well, as there have been a few black mass murderers. The DC snipers come to mind. And there have been some black mass murderers who have killed groups of people and said that they were being racist towards them and they were dealing with oppression. And that part is true as well. But there are also black mass murderers that have not used racism as an excuse. So we don't want to get into that one way or another. But there is some legitimacy to this theory that blacks have learned to control their rage, largely because we have had to, given our history in this country. And genetic memory is real. Epigenetics is real. So definitely, if you're one of the doubters to genetic memory and believing that we have acquired certain skills, certain behaviors, certain biological behaviors over the years due to our history, you should definitely look that stuff up. But again, that's not a solid theory. We can say one way or another. Not really a whole lot of information given. But there are black mass murderers that kind of go against that narrative. Another theory is that it is happening and we just aren't hearing about it, which is very much a possibility. You can't rule that out completely. But we can't comment on things that we don't know what's going on, except to give our opinion of the likelihood of them. And with that being said, given the history of black people in this country, given the history of black rebellions and black mass murders and things of that nature in this country, it doesn't seem like it would be something that would be historically accurate to black people in America. Even the studies that tie mass murders to economic downturns can't show the same level of correlation with black people. So I don't think that that's a possibility, because it doesn't seem to be in our collective cultural nature to do these types of things. Now, with that being said, there is violence in our community, of course, and that violence is largely the result of various economic oppression policies, cultural policies, survival tactics, various, like we could do a whole show on that. But it's very rare that you'll find someone, a black person, intentionally shooting up other black people. Even growing up in the hood and hanging out with the hoodlums and the gangsters, there was an unwritten rule that you don't touch kids, you don't touch innocents, and you don't touch schools. So there was that unwritten rule there that provided a set of safety nets for children, especially on school premises, because a lot of these people have kids. So even to that, and that's something that needs to be addressed, is this false narrative, because the school shooting, the 11-year-old and the 13-year-old, I believe it was, at Westside High that killed those people, or at Westside Middle that killed those people in the 1970s, they were bragging about wanting to be Bloods, wanting to be gangsters. These were two middle school white boys. But that sort of narrative that's been pushed forward has actually been shown to be at least a bit of motivation for white kids shooting up schools, which would be all the more reason for white people to stop pushing that narrative. But, you know, the narrative continues to be pushed, and the more disgusting part of it is that we continue to sign off on it. But moving forward, another theory is that we just don't own as many guns as other groups. And while there is some truth to this, that white people don't own, black people don't own as many guns as whites, and it'd be kind of crazy if we did, given the disparity in the population numbers, but we didn't see any of the other behavior that would suggest that even with guns, we would start shooting up the schools and killing off masses of kids at black schools and things of that nature. And this is where we go back to the unwritten rule. This is where we get back into all of those various types of situations and scenarios where we can say that there just isn't a history of us behaving in that kind of way on a mass level towards masses of individuals. And maybe it is our centuries of systemic mistreatment that have caused us to gain a level of control and quiet our rage. Or maybe it's because guns weren't readily available, and when they were, schools, our schools, were prisons or fortresses. Maybe it's a combination of all those things and more, which I'm very, very positive it is definitely a combination of all of those things and more, cultural things that stem back, even going back to our greater ancestry towards the African continent. I'm sure that there are a whole host of things that come into play about why our schools aren't getting hit, and why we aren't doing a lot of the, or we aren't doing hardly, or well, any of the hitting when it comes to school shootings. But all of that is just to paint a picture for the next part of the discussion, something that's slowly unveiling right before our eyes. And moving into the modern debate, we're seeing, once again, liberals courting black people's numerical and moral support for the issues of ensuring the safety of themselves, their livelihood, in this case, their kids, which you never want to see any harm come to anyone's kids. We say that, don't we? But how true is that? Because how concerned do other people seem to be about our kids? How concerned do they seem to be about the things that are going on in our community towards our kids? But yet and still, now they're starting to utilize our narrative and our story and trying to garner our support to help them fix their problems. And we've seen this before. When you go back to the late 1800s, early 1900s in the women's suffrage movement, when you go to the various union and workplace movements that have happened throughout American history where they recruited black people for numbers. When you go to the 1970s and you have the feminist movement again courting black women to the point where the black women had to get together to form their own feminist identity with the 1974, I believe it was, Kabahi River Collective Statement. You know, and you had various people at that point talking about if we could get the black woman to have her rights, then we would have achieved racial equality and gender equality. And all of those things worked wonderfully for getting other people what they needed to get, and worked horribly towards us getting what we needed to get. So we've seen them utilizing our narratives before. Even now, even with the LGBTQ movement, we've seen them utilizing our narratives to get what we want, what they want, all the while harboring racist agendas within their own midst, and all the while not standing up for us when we need people to come and stand up for us. So when you get to this modern debate, now you have conservatives who are pointing out the extremely true fact that the media doesn't seem to care when black kids are being shot and when their mothers are crying, unless it has something to do with the police. And even that's extremely rare in relation to how often it happens. Meanwhile, on the other side, you have liberals who are using the violence that has been in our community over the past few decades and using that to push forward their agenda on gun control. So we're in this situation where once again, our narratives are being taken and being shaped to benefit other people, and people are courting us. They want us to come get on board and take advantage and this, that, and the third, and be of assistance and this, that, and the third. And again, we've seen this time and time again. I could do a whole series of shows on how often this happens, and it never really pans out for us, because at the end of the day, nobody cares enough about our problems to stay devoted to them beyond them getting whatever they need fixed. Neither one of these sides are addressing the real issues in our community, and that's because they don't care enough to find out what they are. When it comes to our schools, no one is talking about the school to prison pipeline. There are no mass protests or grand speeches or congressional considerations for black kids and failing black schools and why governmental resources can't seem to follow black kids the way they follow white kids. And we understand a lot of that is based on tax base, and that goes into a deeper policy and a deeper economic discussion, which we could dive into if we had time to do that in this show. And that might be another series, but all of those things play a part. No one's talking about that. And while these white kids are running around talking about they don't want their schools to become prisons, which is a good thing. Nobody should want their school to become a prison. And in the same breath, they'll turn around and say these guns are the reason for all the violence in the black communities. That's that. Come on. Nobody's talking about the fact that black schools are already prisons. There are already bars on several of the windows, locks on all of the doors, officers walking around armed, getting pat down, key card entries, metal detectors. Nobody's talking about the fact that our schools are already prisons. Nobody's talking about the economic issues that underlie the violence in our community. Nobody's talking about the historic oppression that also underlines the violence in our communities. I don't hear any of these kids or any of these adults or any of these other liberals talking about those things, except when they want to take advantage of those narratives and push their own agenda forward and then leave us hanging. So amidst all of this, what I want us to do, I'm not going to give a clear takeaway this week. What I want us to do is I want us to consider whether or not we should continue to devote our time, our energy, and our resources, our moral standing to people that don't reciprocate, to people that don't care, to people that don't appreciate it, to people that don't do the same to us. I know most of us have this fantasy of sending our kids to white schools to get a good education, and I could do a whole show on what's wrong with that line of thinking, and from the fact that education is not what most of us think that it is, to the fact that they are the ones keeping your kids out of the schools, to the fact that we should be striving to improve our own schools so that our kids can learn their history, be proud of who they are, and our community, more importantly, would maintain ownership of these schools. Because you best believing, as bad as you want your kid to go to these schools, we're seeing it all over the nation where these predominantly white neighborhoods, areas, and districts are trying to separate themselves from the public school board to manage their own education systems. You guys, people like to forget that one of the origins of private academies, private schools, was when they integrated the schools in the 1960s. White people pulled their kids out of the schools and created what became known as Freedom Academies, where they stuck their kids, segregation academies, where they stuck their kids into these places so that they wouldn't have to go to school with black people. So a lot of those schools that were integrated in the 60s have since become all black schools, have since our community has resegregated. We're not doing that. They're doing that, and we continue to chase them around because they have the good education instead of building our own good education. So again, I want us to think about whether or not it's in our best interest to continue to move forward with this line of thinking, this we are the world line of thinking, even though the world is not us. This we want to support everybody line of thinking, even though everybody does not support us. And I know how that sounds. I know a lot of people are going to say that sounds selfish, that sounds cruel, that sounds this, that sounds that. But when you're an individual, people oftentimes tell you you have to take care of yourself before you can take care of other people. If your battery isn't charged, you can't give a charge to anyone else. And we often say these things like this on an individual level to ourselves and to our children, but when we try to do them on a cultural level with a bad guy for making these statements, like if your kid comes home and says, these kids won't play with me anymore, you won't tell your kid to go and force those kids to play with you. You would tell your kid to make his own friends and play his own game. But when it comes to a cultural community level, we spend all of our time on a cultural, on a mass level, chasing behind people that don't want to be affiliated with us instead of doing our own thing. And then oftentimes when we do our own thing, it's an exact replica of what they're doing instead of anything that contributes directly to our own strengths and weaknesses. And that's something that I really just want us to think about. Just think about. Do your research. Go back. Look at the history. Look at all of the various partnerships we've had and how they've turned out. Even the abolitionist movement was filled with racist white people. So we just have to begin to think about these things. Think about why they're doing these. What are going to be the benefits for us? Not for the world as a whole, because progress has two different dynamics. When there are two or more groups of people, there's progress for one and progress for the other. And if progress for one is so much greater than progress for the other, then that is the progress that will move overall progress forward. And I have a whole paper written on that, a whole book coming on that soon, on progress, breaking it down, black progress versus white progress. But we really need to be thinking about these things, thinking about our history, thinking about our future, thinking about these partnerships, thinking about what has historically happened to us. Because if you tell me 15 lies in a row, I'm not going to believe the 16th thing you say. If I do, that makes me an idiot, and all of the repercussions fall on my head. I'll see you next week.
Lessons from the screen, what we mean is we go through. Different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review. So you only spend time on the docs that you need to.